Chase and Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase McKay, Big Joe Dubin, Nick Frazier, Dr. Crane with you here on this Wednesday. And as we do every Wednesday at 9:30, we say hello to our pal John McClain, SportsRadio610.com down in Houston. John, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great, guys. What a race we got in the AFC South, the only division without a team with a losing record, and the only division with a team without a winning record.
Yeah, at this point, if I had told you through four games all four teams would be 2-2, I think you probably would have laughed at me at the start of the season, but here we are.
I would have, Chase. I would have laughed at you because I didn't think the Texans would be 2-2 coming off 24 point wins over Jacksonville and Pittsburgh. First time that's happened here, back to back since 2015. And I would have never thought a rookie quarterback was playing the way CJ Stroud has. I thought they would beat Indy, and they lost to Indy by 11, but they've bounced back. And, you know, you guys are right there covering a team. Seems to be on a weekly roller coaster. When I think of the Titans, I think about Forrest Gump and the box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get.
That is very, very true. So, we've been talking about this for the last few days, that Sunday was their best offensive performance, really, in over a calendar year. Everything that pretty much they tried, except for a lateral over to Tannehill and then a deep bomb to D-Hop, which he dropped and he was mad at himself for. Everything looked really, really good for the Titans when it came to the offense. So what did you think about that performance?
That is strange about Hopkins, because I remember he went through one season here. I can't remember if it was 18 or 19, his last season before Bill O'Brien traded him, which was one of the worst moves in NFL history. And he didn't have a drop the whole season. And so that's very unusual, and I'm pretty sure he's not going to drop another one in that situation. No matter what they try with the Titans, it all starts with Derrick Henry. You know, he's got to do better than averaging 3.9. And once they had that game on Sunday, everybody knows it's coming, and you still can't stop it. And Ryan Tannehill, as you guys know, because you see him on a weekly basis, if it doesn't work for Henry, it generally doesn't work for Tannehill. And, you know, having two touchdown passes and like four interceptions is not going to cut it. But, you know, they're going to play good defense. You know, they're going to play great run defense, only giving up one rushing touchdown. And Tim Kelly has got to reach into his bag and pull out tricks. But they're still basic with Henry. And I know a lot of people look around the league, you know, especially the Colts, because they're about to host them, and they thought, well, maybe Derrick Henry is not the same. Maybe Henry has hit the wall, and then he has the kind of game he had Sunday as a runner and receiver, and you go, oh, no.
Talking to John McClain. John, are we buying or selling the Texans right now after four games?
I picked him to lose to Pittsburgh by 3. Pittsburgh was favored by 2.5. Steelers were coming off back-to-back victories. It's not a great Steelers team, but they still had won 2 in a row, and the Texans just beat them up from start to finish. And so people ask me if I was predicting the Texans now compared to before training camp when I said 6-11, would I change it? Look, they play an easy schedule. And they play the NFC South. You get the last place schedule, which is easier. So I might, based on Stroud staying healthy, pick them to win 7 or 8 games. But in the AFC South right now, you look at every team and what they've done, and you say, why not the Texans? Why not the Titans? Why not the Jaguars? Why not the Colts? And that's what – it may not be a great division, but it's certainly competitive and interesting, and you guys are going to see a great example of it. And I can't wait to see the Titans going up against Anthony Richardson, who's done better throwing than I thought, but he's still primarily a runner, and what that great run defense is going to do to contain him.
What do you think about Jonathan Taylor on Sunday, putting him in there? What does it do for the Colts? Does it hurt him? Does it help him because, you know, he hasn't practiced and all the discontent with him and Ursay? How do you see this playing out on Sunday?
I'm sure he still wants to be traded. No other team's going to give him a big contract. So he's going to have to play under his current contract with the Colts or be traded under his current contract. Hope he plays well enough to get one more in line with what he wants. And if he doesn't, team will just franchise him, and he can go through this again. But if you've been out as long as he has, and you haven't been practicing, having two practices, two legitimate practices during the week, tells me he's not going to go out there and carry the ball 20 times. He's not going to be the Jonathan Taylor he was 2 years ago when he led the league in rushing and had, I think, 18 touchdowns. But he still might get a few carries. And the thing is, you know, a lot of people say he wasn't injured. He said he wasn't injured. And I don't know if they've investigated that or not, but it certainly cooled the controversy for a while, and it could be reignited. You know, if they activate him, is he going to have a back injury? Is he going to have something wrong with him? So I don't think we will see him getting as much action as he ordinarily would. But anytime he's on the field, he certainly has to be accounted for. But the one thing you can count on with the Titans is the run defense.
Oh, absolutely. Let me ask you this about Ursay. You know, it's great when an owner comes out and makes those comments if you're a sports writer because, you know, we take it and run with it. But I'd imagine from the player standpoint, it's like, you know, please be quiet. Was Bud Adams, when you covered him in Houston all those years, did he get involved in things like that? Was he as bad as Ursay of going to the press and talking about a player?
No, Bud never talked much at all about anything. Controversy he created was things that didn't have to do with on the field. One time, Bud was team was playing really bad. It was in the early 80s, and they were at a function, and we got him afterward, and we asked him, you know, what's the matter with your team? And I think he said, I think we're making too many charity appearances. And I looked at the PR guy standing behind Bud, and he's rolling his eyes like, oh, my God. But they were so bad, it didn't matter. But no, Bud never ripped his team at all. You know, that wasn't what he was all about. Jim Irsay has, you know, Jerry Jones talks on a weekly basis after the games and on his talk show on the radio. But Jim Irsay, he does a lot on social media that other owners don't. And you know his coach, his general manager, and his players wish he would put a lid on it.
John McClain is with us from Houston. Okay, so I promised somebody I would ask you this question. With Derrick Henry now surpassing Earl Campbell on the franchise rushing list, he's just a little shy of 1,400 behind Eddie George for all time. Right now, today, John, where do you rank Derrick Henry in all-time greats with the Oilers-Titans franchise?
There'll never be any player better than Earl Campbell. What he did here, came out first 3 years, led the league in rushing, led them to the playoffs 3 years, got them to the AFC Championship game, one step short of the Super Bowl 2 years in a row, and they lost in the AFC Championship game to Pittsburgh. And he did it, and he had another 1,300-yard season. There in 1983, there was a strike here. In 1982, they only played 9 games, but Earl is the greatest player in Houston, in franchise history, Houston history. You know, he started like a house on fire, and Henry didn't, and then Henry picked up, and a lot of people think Earl got used up, and that's not what happened to him. He had a knee injury that they traded him to New Orleans where Bump Phillips was coaching, but Earl's the best football player in Houston history and maybe the best player in player period. When we had a Houston Sports Hall of Fame, first three people we put in were Earl Campbell, Nolan Ryan, and Hakeem Olajuwon because we think they're the best in our three sports. But people in Nashville, of course, are going to say Derrick Henry.
Well, do you think he deserves to be in the, you know, top five conversation of franchise?
Of course, yeah. Now, you talking about his running backs? The debate to me is Henry and George at number two. But as far as players, the Oilers got a lot of guys in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And there's no guarantee Derrick Henry right now is going into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. He'll certainly get serious consideration. And if he keeps this up a couple more years, he's going to be a lock.
No doubt about it.
Absolutely with that. That's a debate we've, you know, because, you know, it's fresh on our mind because you covered those run and shoot teams, John, with the Oilers back in the late 80s and 90s. I think Haywood Jeffries, to me, is one of the fantastic receivers of ever in Oilers history. But you put Derek Mason on those run and shoot teams, he has probably the same results, same stats with these guys. So it's the compare and contrast that will just take us to the end of days, I guess, correct?
Well, it helped for those guys here to have Warren Moon throwing them the ball. And, you know, he was the first ballot Hall of Famer, too. And, of course, the Titans haven't ever had anybody like Moon, and the Oilers have never had anybody like Moon. So, well, Steve McNair couldn't throw the ball like Warren Moon, and they haven't had anybody here that could throw it. Watson came close, but, of course, his career was derailed. And I'm not going to say anything about C.J. Stroud and Warren Moon because he's only played four games. But if Derek Mason and other Titans receivers had Moon throwing them the ball, they'd be right up there with the greatest in franchise history.
He is John McClain from Houston. We'll have more with him coming up next here in just a few minutes on the Chase and Big Joe Show, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, continuing our conversation with John McClain. SportsRadio610.com is where you can find his work. And, John, the international series continues in the NFL as the London Jaguars, as I like to call them sometimes, will take on Buffalo. Now, Buffalo had that huge win over Miami. Do you think that that was just a result of, one, Buffalo is a really hard place to play, that's a good football team, or could you also attribute that maybe Miami had a little bit of a hangover after putting up 70 the week before?
I think that Buffalo right now is one of the top three teams in the league with three consecutive victories. They don't have their running game where they want it to be, but Josh Allen is playing great. And I thought there was a chance Miami might beat them playing up there when the weather was nice instead of having to do it in the winter. And it was just an old-fashioned butt-kicking. And Jacksonville, of course, bounced back in a big way and just pounded the Falcons after the Texans pounded the Jaguars in Jacksonville. And some people think, oh, my goodness, that's the poor old Bills got to go all the way to London. Well, that's shorter than going to L.A. and Seattle. And so it's not going to be any big deal. The Jaguars are in const over there 2 weeks in a row. And they know how to deal with playing over there, not to mention the travel. So can the Jaguars rebound? Sure, they can, but I don't think they will. That team I saw Buffalo put on the field against the Dolphins is as good as any team not named 49ers.
So you don't give Jacksonville any type of advantage because they stayed over there and don't have to deal with the travel?
No, I think it's just like any home field advantage. The team has to travel. But in this day and age, teams travel in luxury. It's the thing about the old days of baseball when they traveled on trains. It didn't have air conditioning and things like that. Today, players, coaches, they're all pampered. When they get to London, they treat them like royalty. They make sure they have every conceivable thing they want. And if the Jaguars do beat them, then people are going to start to think, okay, they are definitely the class of the AFC South. But if they lose, that's the best thing that can happen to the Titans, Texans, and Colts.
John, a lot of questions this weekend, and I was reading all these about when does Bill Belichick get on the hot seat? Does that ever happen? I mean, he can pretty much control what he wants to do, but that performance against the Cowboys Sunday was awful. Will he be on the hot seat at some point if this keeps up?
He's been on the hot seat since the offseason. The media up there said Kraft is not happy with the way they have not played better since Tom Brady left. I'm guessing he blamed Brady's departure on his relationship with Belichick, which was not bad. It was just wearing after all those years. And so right now he's got a losing record without Brady. They draft Mac Jones in the first round. He got good as a rookie, for a rookie. Then last year they stick him with two coaches that were defensive coordinator and special teams coach, and he struggles. So then they bring in Bill O'Brien. And they think, okay, Bill O'Brien is the elixir for what Mac Jones needs, and now he's as bad as he was. They got to start thinking about a new quarterback because the draft's going to be deep. But, man, can you imagine what it's going to be like if Kraft fires him or Belichick leaves? There's been a general thought around the NFL that Belichick might move into a cushy front office, but I wouldn't want to be in his shadow if I'm the next coach. But that's going to be something we're going to have to watch play out. Fortunately for the Patriots, Aaron Rodgers went down for the year, so they shouldn't finish in last place. But if they do, with the Jets having Zach Wilson at quarterback, it won't surprise me at all if Belichick's gone.
Obviously, if I'm Kraft, there's one coach in the NFL that I know pretty well, and that's Mr. Mike Vrabel. Is Gruden in the 2001-02 season the last time a coach was traded for draft choices? Because if I'm the Patriots, I go after Vrabel.
Gruden cost them 2 ones and 2 twos, and they thought it was worth it because they won their first Super Bowl. And I'm sure if Kraft wanted a head coach, he would Vrabel somebody he would look at. And if Mike's under contract, at the worst, Mike could probably get an extension and a lot of money out of it. But a lot of people think that Gerard Mayo, their inside linebackers coach who played there and has coached there and has turned down a couple offers to go to others, is being groomed to be the next head coach. I don't know if that's true or not, because if you could have a proven Mike Vrabel over an unproven Gerard Mayo, anybody in the right mind would say, of course you'd rather have Mike Vrabel.
John McClain is with us. So the game of the weekend and maybe of the season so far, Cowboys, 49ers, Sunday Night Football, 49ers undefeated. And I pretty much put them as, and maybe the Eagles are there too, but they had a scare against Washington, as a team that is as advertised. Dallas destroys the Patriots, but they got beat the week before because of Dak's inconsistency. What do you think about this matchup between the Cowboys and the 49ers?
49ers have a streak of scoring at least 30 points going back to last season. Brock Purdy's never lost a regular season game. But he hasn't been in a position where they're down, say, 2 touchdowns in the fourth quarter and he has to bring them from behind, because they're just so balanced. They got so many playmakers on both sides of the ball. Cowboys' running game has been good with Tony Pollard. They got injuries in their offensive line. Defensive line's playing great. And I fully expect the 49ers to win. You know, they may play again in the playoffs. They played in the NFC Championship game, I think, 6 times. And I think the 49ers will win this game. But it's a game where Dak Prescott has got to play not just well, he's got to be great. So far, he hadn't been great.
Yeah, he hasn't at all. John McClain is with us from Houston.
John, we're talking with both teams are unbeaten going into the game Sunday night. Do you think we'll ever see another team in the NFL go unbeaten? I mean, I know now it's at 17 games. I know the Patriots did it at 16 and the Dolphins at 14. But do you think we'll even see a team get to 14-0 again? It's just so hard to stay unbeaten.
It is, Joe, especially with teams having so much information from analytics about every single player strategy. Everything you can want is right at your fingertips about a team, tendencies, coaches, and, of course, injuries tell the tale. I don't see any team being able to play a full season health-wise and go unbeaten or even 14-0. It's just the game is too physical. They have rules now on concussions where you've got to go out. Usually if you go out, you're out the next week. Quarterbacks still get hurt even though the rules are designed to protect them. I don't think we'll see a team like the Patriots when the only game they lost was the Super Bowl to the Giants.
We talked about Aaron Rodgers earlier, and, you know, he tears the Achilles opening week, and he's out for the year. But he's, you know, telling Pat McAfee and telling other people that he's ahead of schedule in rehab and that his goal is to be back this season, which would be completely unprecedented in my mind, if he's able to do so. But if you're the Jets, is that a risk that you're willing to take?
Well, first of all, why would they bring him back unless they were in the playoffs? And if they're in the playoffs with Zach Wilson, why would you take Zach Wilson out if he played you well enough played well enough to get you in the playoffs. So, no, I do not expect him to come back. Maybe he'll take some immunizations like he had during the pandemic, and that'll help him.
Oh, yes. John, continue on. Watching the game tonight with the Giants, I mean, they just – how does a team just look so not there? They signed Daniel Jones. Brian Daboll throws the iPad at his feet and all like that. You've covered teams like that, mid, you know, beginning of the season where it all goes wrong. Can they correct this ship? Because it looks like it's going straight down now.
Well, first of all, I'm not going to be watching the Giants because I don't want to fall asleep early. I've got to watch baseball. Because people here are really fired up about baseball, the way the Astros won the division on the last day and got home field advantage. And but, I mean, the Giants, they got another national appearance coming up, I think, next week. And I understand it's New York, but right now, two New York teams with hopes so high with Aaron Rodgers and with Daniel Jones. Is there any player right now not living up to his contract more than Daniel Jones other than Joe Burrow? But Burrow's got an excuse because of his calf injury. But they're out of sync. Their offense is terrible. Last year, every single thing went right for the Giants, and they won a playoff game. But right now, they're terrible. They're not Bears terrible yet. Chicago's the worst team, but they're close to it. And, of course, they're getting hammered, and not having a baseball team in the playoffs means the media in New York and New Jersey is solely focused on the NFL, and the Jets got an excuse for losing. The Giants do not. They're going to earn most of the wrath.
Well, let me ask you this, college football-wise, how much is Texas being the talk? I know you're down in Houston. I know A&M's close there, but how much does Texas football get talked about down in Houston?
Unfortunately, way too much, but they've earned it. The Longhorns have played really well. They haven't won a conference since 2009, even though perennially they have the best talent. You know, they used to call Mack Brown Coach March because that's when they're recruiting. And now Steve Sarkisian's got a lot of NFL talent, starting with his quarterback, Quinn Ewers, who in most mock drafts is one of the lower first-round picks in a great quarterback draft. And they play Oklahoma. Oklahoma was a huge disappointment last season, as were the Longhorns. But this is the first time in a long time they've both been unbeaten and ranked where they are. And I hate to say it, but I got to give the Longhorns props for doing a really good job this season. And because they're from Texas, I hope they beat the Sooners in the annual Red River rivalry, and then they're your problem.
Yeah, you're right. That is true. John, appreciate it as always, and we'll check out your work, sportsradio610.com.
Chase and Joe, thank you guys very much as always, and good luck to the Titans against the Colts.
Absolutely. We'll talk next week. John McClain joining us from Houston, as he does every Wednesday at 9:30.
Just wind him up, man.
Let him go. Great stories, for sure. We'll get into some college football coming up next because JoJo's got to work a big game tonight.
I do.
In Murfreesboro. We'll talk about that and much more. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.